Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio.
Live.
This is the Gus Bradley Show.
Gus Bradley Show.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by EverBank.
Play hard, play fast, play together, run and hit at the bank.
The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
Welcome into the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman joined by the head coach on a beautiful Thursday night. And Thursday night football is on tonight. Pittsburgh Steelers and Baltimore Ravens, one of the old black and blue games in the National Football League. Coach, I know you you appreciate those kind of games.
So. Oh, yeah. It'd be a great game. I know whenever it's in the division, it's always even a little bit hyped up and higher intensity.
Why are games that in the National Football League to where it's a division matchup, they're always so close? I mean, it's almost as if when you have the cross-conference games, it seems like that's where you have the games that maybe get out of control. But the ones that are in the division are rarely lopsided.
Well, you know, a lot of times I can just speak from experience that, you know, you play them for 3 years. It's actually six times you play them, and then it's the fourth year, and it's the seventh time you played them. And, you know, you just get a pretty good feel for, you know, maybe how the coordinator calls plays or, you know, how their whole thought process during the whole game. And, you know, the more information you get is also, you know, always more helpful.
Do you guys keep – because I remember one of my old roommates with the New York Jets, his name was Bill Pakel, came to us in New York from the Oakland Raiders. And his roommate in Oakland was Howie Long, and got a chance to meet Howie Long. I know Howie. He's a great guy. And Howie is one of those guys that he used to keep a notebook on coaches. I mean, so that he would have their audibles, their systems, their checks at the line of scrimmage, the style of how they like to call a game. As coaches, do you guys keep books, so to speak, on the opposing coaches?
Sure. You do a game analysis after the game, and you just write down notes. You know, what would we do different? You know, here's what we liked. We went in there with this approach. Was it beneficial? You know, you keep notes, and it's kind of a game after summary. So you have that. It's like a page and a half type sheet that we fill out. But I do know what you're talking about because Derek Brooks, when I coached in Tampa, he had notebooks full of all that information, and he claims to still have them, you know, in his house and to go back. And coaches are no different now. You know, we have all this material, and we have notebooks through the week, and, you know, we'll go through a bunch of them.
I remember playing defensive line. One of the things that I always wanted was snap count. And offensive coordinators sometimes must have thought the defensive linemen were really dumb. Red, white, blue. One, two, three. I mean, come on. Can you at least, you know, learn a lesson from baseball and maybe change it up a little bit? Check, 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 red, you know, whatever. And it was on.
I got a book on you, too, Logs. We can take this time right now to talk about what we wrote down on you.
Bring it on. I'll take it. But with tonight's matchup, there was obviously a huge amount of distraction this week. And it's not really a distraction, a discussion with the Baltimore Ravens and Ray Rice. Have you been following all of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to, right? I mean, it's such an unfortunate situation. But I think for us and for our team, it's you know, the players are aware of it. So there might be a little talk about it amongst the coaches and players. But for the most part, we're trying to eliminate distractions and avoid those things and get our players to think about, hey, our preparation. And so minimal conversation.
Can that be a talking point to a football team to make that into a learning experience?
Sure, that part of it. And I know with our team, and you know, I think they have an understanding of what our culture is all about and what we believe in. And you know, it's you know, so I think they're obviously learning situations that take place, but such an unfortunate deal.
All right, so yesterday I'm in the woods doing some work in the woods, you know, no communication, you know, no internet, any of that kind of stuff. And I come back and walk in the building, and one of the first persons I see is Ryan Robinson. You know, I say, "Hey, Ryan, what did I miss yesterday?" Well, and, you know, Cecil and Dwayne Gratz and Marquise Lee. What in the world's going on? I'm sitting there going, "What happened? What happened? And how is everybody?"
Well, you know what? We had a really good practice today. Cecil was out today. So we'll reevaluate him, and we'll get reports from our trainers in the morning, see how he's doing. Marquise practice and Dwayne Grotz practice. So, you know, some of them were on a limited basis just to see how they would handle it. But I think we came out of it feeling good.
The two guys that from the game that I'm concerned about, Jonathan Cyprian in the NFL's concussion protocol and Toby Gerhart. How is Jonathan Cyprian doing?
Well, I think, you know, we'll probably have to make a decision tomorrow. You know, so tomorrow will be a big day for us, you know, to get all the information collected. How he's, you know, it's such a step-by-step procedure in the NFL. And so we'll gather all the information and, you know, move forward after we find that out.
Before we move on to Toby Gerhart, this NFL concussion protocol, I don't think anybody's ever really spelled it out. Here's what it is. Here's a step. Do you even understand it?
Yeah, it's you know, you learn, because even the strategies, you know, as far as the safety for the players, it was tweaked a little bit this year. And so, yeah, but they have to pass one test, and then they take another one, and if they don't pass that test, then they go back. And, you know, it's kind of a series of tests that they have to take. Now, you know, they meet with a neurologist, and, you know, those things I can't tell you. But I do know that I think it's a really good thing. It really is, because it protects the player, and it's all in terms of safety. And it has that mindset. So once a player is cleared, you can feel pretty good that he's gone through a variety of tests to make sure that his safety is first in mind.
Didn't have any of that back in the day. Here's smelling salts. Here's an aspirin. And go right on back out there, young man. You'll be good to go.
Yeah,
don't worry about the headache. It'll go away tomorrow.
it's a lot different. But like I said, I think it's good. And the players have gone through it. And, you know, it's such a violent game, you know, and that's what we come to love about it, and the passion that it's played with. And, you know, when it's that violent, there's going to be some injuries. And I think, you know, we understand that, but let's make sure we have the safety of the players in mind.
When you talk about how violent it is, I can remember, I think the year after that I had stopped playing, you know, and it was away from the game for a little while. And when you're a player, you're in it, and sometimes you just don't, you don't see it for what it is. And was doing the Jaguar stuff and was at the game, wasn't broadcasting on radio at that point, and I remember would come down to field level right towards the conclusion of the game just to watch a little bit of it from the sideline and then go do what I had to do. And I remember that first time that I did that as not a player after I was done playing. I remember going to the sideline going,
It is something now.
I can't believe I used to do that.
I can remember my first game being on the sideline, and I went to a couple of NFL games and obviously coached in college, and being on the sideline in college and then coming to the NFL, and I can distinctly remember Jermaine Phillips had a hit right about 3 yards in front of me on the sideline, and the running back got a toss play and was coming down the sideline. I was like, oh no, you know, he's gonna go, and right in front of me out of nowhere Jermaine Phillips came in, and it was an explosive hit, and I went, oh, this is a different level here.
Totally
now.
Different.
It is something. And it's such a, you know, the game is played with such speed, such intensity, and you know, it is. It's something to be a part of.
Speed, intensity, and you know, you always want it clean. Toby Gerhart was the recipient of a horse collar tackle, clearly illegal. I'm sure that there's going to be a fine issued in that case. How is Toby doing? Because it looked like when it happened, it did not look pretty.
Right. Well, he actually, I think it, you know, we're okay. You know, he made it through it, and I think there was some soreness that he went through, and now today he went limited in practice, but you saw him out there at least running around, and, you know, it was a good sign. And but sure, it looked like it could have been a lot worse.
Do you guys, as a coach, do you follow up with the league on an instance like this to where that was an illegal play? Do you follow up and say, hey, we need to make sure that we address this because that illegal play impacted one of our players? And so do you call the league office and say, hey, what happened here?
No. It's, you know, the flag was called. The penalty was called. What we turn more into the officiating and Dean Blandino is calls that You know, it might be, hey, this was a block in the back during a punt return, and it wasn't called. Do you see it the same way? And they always respond. They give us their, you know, results, what they found out. And then it helps us because now we can go teach our players, hey, this should have been called. It was helmet to helmet, wasn't called. They missed it. It clearly was, okay, you can't go helmet to helmet. And so, you know, there's situations like that that are brought up. And it's just to teach our players, you know that might have got missed this game, but next game it will be called.
I know a lot of people that have been in the National Football League seem to really appreciate Dean Blandino and the job that he's done for the short amount of time. And seem to have a lot of respect for him. And as a guy that's in that position, he probably hears a lot of calls from coaches that says, come on, Dean, why aren't we getting the calls? Come on. I mean,
on Monday, I'm sure he gets a bunch of those phone calls. And it is because, you know, it's such a frustrating game, and you feel like that one call determined the outcome of the game. And, you know, that passion that the fans have, the players play with, the coaches feel it, and what I really appreciate with the officials, I think, is when they communicate. And that's all you hope for as a coach. And, if they make a bad call, they say, you know what, I missed it. Because then it doesn't affect the integrity. You know, if it happened right in front of you and you believe they saw it and they missed it and they don't admit it, now you question everything they do.
Right.
And that's not how the NFL is. For 99.9%. You know, there's great communication that takes place.
There was such a huge increase in the preseason with all the new point of emphasis about defensive contact in the backfield, and then also, for that matter, for offensive contact at the top of a route. Did you see in week one to where you feel like that maybe, okay, they backed off a little bit, or did they stay consistent and your players and other players are starting to adapt?
I think it's calmed down. I think that maybe initially the first preseason game calls that, you know, things that took place our first game would have been called. But I think they're getting a better feel for, okay, here's what we're looking for. Still, you know, if you have holding, defensive holding away from the play, a pass play, they're going to call it. So that's remained consistent. But I think the, you know, like the Mercedes Lewis one down the sideline, you know, looked like there was some contact being made. There was a no call there. That call maybe in the preseason, you know, it may have been called just to point out an emphasis.
But for me, I want it to calm down, both sides. You know, let the players adapt a little bit, let the officials back off a little bit. It makes the game certainly more entertaining for me.
Right. I think it has.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show, folks. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jaguars' offensive production right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman here with the head coach. And Gus, the offensive production. I remember going back to college where we used to have goals on the board. You know, you had offensive goals, defensive goals. And I remember defensively, points was always right at the top. And goal was 17 points or less allowed, and you felt like as a defense you had a productive day. Offensively, for your guys scoring 17 points, and certainly with some really nice plays by the defense to set that offense up, you guys are probably going, okay, we got to find a way to score more points than we did, certainly than you did in Philadelphia.
Yeah, you know what? In the first half, a great first half. In the second half, we just, we didn't get any points on the board, and that's frustrating to us all. I think we go back and look at it, and we as coaches and players, we look at, you know, what could we have done differently? And I know there's, you know, I made the point about, hey, there are some drop passes. But there's some things as coaches we look back and said, you know what, we could have helped our guys out more here and there. So, it, you know, we all take the, you know, the brunt of it because of it. And that's what I told the team. All right, it's over now. Let's learn from this, coaches, players, everybody, and use this to continue our growth. And we can't miss that. And, that's where we're at.
I remember before the Philadelphia Eagles game, the analyst wide receiver for the Philadelphia Eagles, Mike Quick, came in our booth and, you know, just wanted to have a chat. And he's a super guy. And he said, so tell me about the Jaguars' offense. So I was talking to him, and I said, hey, you know, this offensive line without Beatles, you know, 14 starts at the positions they're playing at. I said, starting rookie wide receivers, you know, on the outside. And Mike turns and looks at me, and he goes, wow. You know, I don't think he kind of knew the extent right. of some of the inexperience and how young that this group is. But so, I mean, you expect growth, right? I mean, without a group like that.
No doubt. I mean, I think, you know, through a period of time, because of our youth, you should see the growth really stand out at you. You know, it's a team that is really experienced and playing at a high level. You know, sometimes that growth, it goes back and forth, and it maybe is not as evident. Where our hopes is that, boy, we make even, you know, make a good jump this week in our growth. And, you know, the way we practice, we're giving ourselves the opportunity for it. I think there's a lot of lessons learned from that game.
One area that you probably want to have improved quicker is the running game. And both, you know, with the offensive line and with the backs. Because I remember in that game, you know, particularly in the second half when you went three and out on three consecutive series offensively, the third downs were like third and nine or third and 10 or third and 11.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, to establish a run game, and, you know, I know we're trying to find positives. And we're trying, well, that we averaged 1.8 yards per carry in the second half, 3.2. But it's still not good enough. We need to get up in the fours. You know, that's, you know, obviously what we're looking for. But we understand that, you know, sometimes it takes time. And we just want to speed this up. And the offensive line feels it. The running backs feel it. The receivers feel it. Tight ends. So, you know, we just got to really stick with it. And we know sometimes it is a process. And we just got to keep working, believing in it. And, you know, because that's what the players hope.
Statistics and analytics are obviously taking leaps and bounds in the National Football League. But one of the old statistics that I remember from even when I first started playing is third down success based on down and distance and how your chances of success just go way higher, exponentially higher, the shorter the distance is on third down. For example, I guess like third and seven plus, your conversion rate might be 15% or 20%, and then you get to third and five, all of a sudden it jumps all the way up to 45%.
Sure.
You know, and then third and one to two, it's like 75%. I mean, it's dramatic.
It is, you know, and it's the game being called, it's tough because let's say you run the ball on first and 10 and you don't get any yards. Well, you're always looking for third and manageable. Well, let's say, well, okay, let's throw a quick game here and get it to be third and five. Well, the coordinator, if you start doing that often, the coordinator goes, well, this guy will go opposite. If he runs, then he passes. He alternates in his play calling. And now a team says, well, they ran, they got nothing, let's blitz on second and 10. You know, blitz because it's a pass, let's get after the quarterback. And you're saying, okay, I can't give him that tendency, so first and 10 you run, and then you say, I'm going to run again, you know, so that I don't give that tendency. And then you run, and then you only get 1 yard, and now it's third and nine. And, you know, you can feel handcuffed. And that's why it's so important. Hey, just let's not make it too complicated. Let's not think what we're thinking he might be thinking, so therefore we have to think that it's too complicated. Let's just run the ball. Let's run the ball, be efficient in our quick game, and take shots and have some explosive plays. And let's have some conviction on that, stick to it, and let's go. And, you know, it's a simple game like that for our players as well.
It's crazy how, I mean, what you're bringing up there about tendencies and all of that. I mean, that's all. I mean, teams analyze that, don't they?
Oh,
I mean, what
yeah.
a coordinator will call with personnel groupings and down and distance, and what was the previous play that he called? Was it run or pass, and what does he follow it
sure.
up with?
I mean, as the defensive coordinator for some years in the NFL, offensive coordinators can't help themselves. You know, they get into a rhythm, they get into a routine, and you can pretty much base to say, okay, I don't – some of the stuff, I have nothing. But in these eight situations, I have something. Here is a 85% chance this is occurring. And so that's part of my job with our offense is after the week, I go back and tear it up like I'm the defensive coordinator. And I'll go back to the offensive staff and say, okay, from the 20 to the 40 on second 7-9 after a run, you are going to do this. And it's an 88% chance that it's happening. And You know, so it's good for our offense to hear that stuff and say, okay, we got to switch some of these tendencies up. And it's not, you know, it's by field, it's by situation. I mean, it takes a long time to do it, but that's what coordinators do.
That's crazy. I mean, because, you know, back in the day, they're like, well, you know, he kind of likes to throw on 3rd and 4 to 6.
Right.
Or 2nd and 4 to 6, or 2nd and 1, he's going to take a shot deep. I mean, it's become so much more mathematics. I mean, in the analytics that is in football, does it take the fun out of it when you have all those numbers and statistical inventories done?
Well, I think you just got to be careful that you're not too analytical as a coach, you know. But, you know, just picture this. You start off a kickoff return, and it brings it out to the 45-yard line, long kickoff return. So it's P&10, initial series, first part of this first series, and it's the first play of a series. And you're saying, this guy, when that happens in the logo area, he likes to take shots. He's trying to get a big play. So now as a defense coordinator, you're saying, okay, well, let's do this. Let's blitz him. You know, and you know, he has a high tendency to take shots. Or let's play cover two and make sure we keep the top on the defense. So, yeah, there's so many situations that happen. And your mind, you got to let it calm down prior to the game. So usually that Sunday morning, you know, coordinators will try to get away from it for a while just so they can think.
Focus in.
Yeah, focus in.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back. I want to talk a little bit about a young man I had, you know, the opportunity to spend some time with on Monday, and it's your undrafted rookie wide receiver, Allen Hurns.
Great.
Certainly impressed the heck out of me, and we'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Jags fans, come protect the bank on September 21st as your Jaguars take on the Colts at 1 p.m. You've got to be there for this amazing season opener and the best game day experience in the NFL with the new world's largest video boards. Tickets are going fast. Get yours today at Jaguars.com. Back here on the Gus Bradley Show with the head coach, Gus Bradley. And you had a rookie wide receiver, Gus, Allen Hurns, that had, boy, what a way to start your first career game in the National Football League. An undrafted rookie starting at wide receiver, and all he does is go catch 2 touchdowns on his first 2 catches.
Yeah, we talk about not letting the game get too big. You know, I think he's a great example of that. But ultra-competitive. And, you know, is really sharp, really picked up the offense fast, and has given him a chance to make some plays for us.
How much has it helped him with that familiarity with the offense that Jed had in Miami and then coming into this program and at least having an idea of what it's like?
Well, I will say this. I think it helped us on a couple things. One, I don't know if we would have gotten him as a free agent if it wasn't for, you know, Jed and Terry Richardson and Tony Sorrentino, the guys that were at Miami with him. I think that he felt like, hey, I trust them. It's a good situation for me. And so that was great.
Because, you know, we'll pause you right there just for a second, because as an undrafted rookie wide receiver, the best place to go is not somewhere where they had two draft picks in the second round.
That's right. And so, you know, I give credit to our scouting staff and Dave Caldwell for, you know, getting him in here. So that was first and foremost. Now he does have a better understanding of our offense, although some of the terminology has changed. You know, for the most part, he understands it, and it allowed him to come in and really pick things up fast. And but yeah, just a great kid, a great man, I should say, and you know, bright-eyed. And
I got you on that, right? You change your terminology.
That's
there.
Right.
I like that.
But he is bright-eyed. I love for the game, and I just love his competitive spirit.
We had him on Jaguars All Access, the Monday Night Television Show, which was actually Tuesday this week because of the Monday Night doubleheader, and you can see, just like you're talking about, very humble. And had asked him, you know, what did you do with your first check? Did you buy yourself something nice? I mean, rookies make good money nowadays. I mean, the minimum salary is, you know, I think what I was making in my 6th year. It's good stuff. And he says, no, I'm still driving a rental car.
Yeah. Let's not change that, huh? No, you know what? He is. He works. And, you know, I think you could talk about a lot of our guys. You bring their names up and you light up just because it feels it's very important to him, And boy, they hurt like no other what happened this past week. And you want guys that will come back, bounce back, have a great practice on Wednesday, and attack Wednesday. And that's what we're building here, and that's the type of mentality that we have here. And with a lot of youth and with the veterans that are kind of showing them the way.
I was very impressed because, you know, for a young player to come out in his first NFL game and have the success that he had after the game, you know, I mean, hey, wide receivers are divas for the most part. I mean, the NFL's proven that. Do you think he'd be excited about his own performance? But he was not happy after the game. You know, he's up in front of the podium. You could tell that he was down. He's probably thinking more about the one drop slash fumble that he had in the game, depending on how it gets ruled in the ball game. But you can tell it means something to him. Give me players like that every day of the week.
I know. You know what? And his biggest thing was, you know, the hit took place, but, you know, his conversation was like, I should have just caught it and went down. You know, I knew a hit was coming. Instead of trying to get that extra yard, I should have just went down. But, God, that's a lot of weight on him. You know, it's he's trying to compete. He doesn't know. He's trying to make a big play. And you're right. You take that spirit any day.
I think he's the perfect example of it doesn't matter how you got here. It's a matter of what you do once you're here, because he has earned the trust of the quarterbacks, earned the trust of your offensive coaches. And you can tell, because in the preseason it showed, the first game of the year it showed, even though there's two other draft picks on him, hey, these guys got to work their tail off to prove to the coaches and the quarterbacks that they're going to be the same reliable player.
Well, I think it's a combination of things. First of all, I think if you go back, we talked about being developmental coaches. And a developmental coach's mindset is, this is who we have, it's all we have, and it's our job to get them better. Rather than kind of the NFL mindset is, this is who we have, but we don't like him, get someone else in. And our coaches really bought into that. And so a guy like Allen Hurns is, you know, also, it's, hey, let's help everybody get better. And let's help everybody. It doesn't matter what round. And our coaches really bought into that. Therefore, Allen Hurns got a chance to run with the ones. And then we saw something. And we kept developing it. And, you know, it's a long season and it's one game. You know, we like the direction that he's going. And, you know, we'll see. I think he's very competitive, and that's what we're excited about.
What does he do that, because, you know, most wide receivers, they have some type of strength, whether it be, okay, this guy here, he's quick. This guy over here, he's got, you know, take the top off of a defense type speed. This guy over here, he's got great hands. But I remember after the draft watching film of Allen Hurns, and my impression was he does everything pretty well, but nothing that's exceptional.
Well, I think you're hitting it right. I think that what he does do exceptional is the way he catches the ball away from his body. He's really strong-handed. And so it doesn't, you know, you're not going to see, you know, he'll have some body catches, but for the most part, if he has a chance, like on a curl route, he's going to reach out, catch it in his hands. That's really hard on a DB now because they're coming back to try to rake him, and he's so strong that, you know, it's tough to get the ball out. And that's where I think, you know, one of his strongest traits.
All right, we come back. I want to hear some Jay Gruden stories. I know you got some. You and Jay Gruden were together in Tampa with the Buccaneers, and we'll do that here on the Gus Bradley Show right after this on the Jaguars Radio Network. Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman joined by the head coach. And Gus, correct me if I'm wrong about the years, but 06 to 08, you were on the staff of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with Jay Gruden.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly how many years he was there with us because he coached the arena football team in Orlando.
Because that was springtime, right?
Yeah. So, and then he would come over and help us in training camp and during the season and you know, would work with the quarterbacks on the field. And, you know, I always remember Jay in that he was, you know, you could visit with him offensively about offense as a defensive coach. And I just thought he had a great nature about him. The players really, really liked him and really treasured his insight.
He's like a Arena Football League legend.
Yeah.
I was looking at some of his numbers there, and I think, what, 6 championships in arena football, 4 as a player and 2 as a coach.
Highly competitive.
Yeah.
Highly competitive guy. What, Louisville, right?
Yeah, I think Louisville, University of Louisville.
Yeah, and then, you know, just a fascinating travel to where he got to, you know, coaching arena football and then, you know, getting a coordinator's job at Cincinnati and, You know, so, but so well deserved.
Do you pull because he spent the last 3 years with the Cincinnati Bengals as offensive coordinator? Do you kind of go back, okay, and look at the Bengals tape and kind of evaluate from a number standpoint when you're doing game breakdown?
Sure. You know, you go back, and the running game is different. I mean, there's some influence from Jay, but I think, you know, the running game is in place from what they did years past because they had the same offense line coach. But the screens, where they pop up, the shots, when does he like quick game, you go back to the Cincinnati games and try to get a feel for how he calls games.
Okay, so no good, really good stories or anything like that on him?
No. He was nothing that jumps out.
All right, let's go to the phone lines and bring up a few callers, and we'll start with Saqib on the south side. Got a question about the second half. Good evening, Saqib.
Hey, how you doing, Coach?
Good. How you doing, Saqib?
Hey, you know, even though I was disappointed that we lost the game, I was screaming here and yelling, you know, at the TV, and my daughter said that, "Dad, they can't hear you there, you know, they're..." But I just want to know, what do you think that you guys needed to do, and what do you think happened in Philly, what they did for you guys to lose that 17-point game? And I also want to say is, coming from Jacksonville, I'm going to Washington to watch the game this week, so I'm excited to see you guys.
That's great. And I could also hear you screaming, too, so your daughter might be wrong. I did hear it. No, you know what? I think, you know, a lot of people would look and say, well, Philadelphia came out in the second half and completely changed their game plan. It wasn't the case. I mean, they can say that maybe they tried a little bit different types of throws and stuff, but for the most part, it was the same. We just didn't make plays, you know, and we had that long run, the third and one, or the fourth and one, that, you know, we just weren't lined up properly, and, you know, they hit us, and give them credit, and really, that was on us. The deep pass, you know, it was just a broke coverage that, you know, something that they did earlier. And, you know, I think that's what makes it even more frustrating. It wasn't that, oh, Philly came out in the second half, because you have to understand a halftime is only 11 minutes, you know, right, or whatever the case is. So, you know, a lot of times the players have a little bit of time themselves because the coaches meet. You might have 2 minutes, 3 minutes with the players, and then you're back out in the field. So it's not like you can change your
reformulate
whole game.
A game
yeah,
plan.
You can't do that. So, you know, it just comes down to we just didn't make the plays that we're capable of making.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines, and we'll bring up Andrew out at the beach. Got a question about Cyprian. Good evening, Andrew.
Hey, guys. Hey. I am so excited because I saw a lot of teamwork with the team. Can you hear me?
Yes, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, when Cyprian went down, you know, I saw a bond. It was almost like the Navy SEALs, you know, leave no man behind. And the fact is, I see this team coming together in a special way. There's no doubt about it. I think you guys ought to bring Marcus Luttrell, the lone survivor, the Navy SEAL, in for a pep talk for one of the games. And I can't wait for Sunday. And I'm glad we have a team. I don't care if we win, lose, or draw. I'm going to be out there screaming. Woo!
Thank you, Andrew.
Hey, I think we should have him come in and speak to the team, huh? No, it's, you know what? Believe me, we feel our fan base. And, you know, we talked about when we're excited, we hope our fans are excited. When we hurt, you hurt. And I know with our fans, they hurt for this last opportunity that we had. And that's okay because our players have that same passion. And, you know, I really like our youth. I really like the blend of experience that we have. We understand that we're young, but we chose that. And that there's no excuse for that. That's what we wanted. And we just feel like the veteran leadership that we have influenced with, you know, with that youth, that we're building something here. And, you know, we all want it to happen fast. Believe me, the guys in the locker room, we all are striving to be our best in a hurry. And, you know, and we have a strict way of going about doing it. And, you know, we're just implementing the plan and following it.
That's why they say that it's a process.
Yeah. Well,
everything's a process. All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. And we come back. I saw something on the film watching the Washington Redskins that I want to bring up with you because not very often that you see this, and I want to see if you kind of picked up on it. Of course you did. Well, we're going to find out right here on the Gus Bradley Show, and you're listening on the Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back. Jeff Loggeman joined by the head coach, Gus Bradley. And Gus, I was watching the film this week and watching the Washington Redskins on offense, and I'm going, holy cow, here's the secret. I mean, to keep the Redskins to 6 points in a ball game, all you need to do is go out there and draft you J.J. Watt next year and then get you another J.J. Watt the year after that. I mean, what a tremendous player he is.
He really is. And I think, you know, we spend the majority of our time, obviously, watching the Redskins and how their offense operates. But, you know, when they're playing Houston and you see J.J. Watt, you can't help but think, is their style of offense this way because J.J. is so disruptive? You know, boy, we saw a lot of quick game, a lot of intermediate routes. Did they go in with that type of mindset in that game because of how disruptive J.J. Watt is, or is that them? I think, you know, those are the questions that we have to answer. And so, you know, you kind of watch how he plays, you know, and see how disruptive he is. It jumps out.
I really enjoy watching film on really good players like J.J. Watt. And to me, he's the greatest defensive player in the National Football League today just because he impacts the game on every down, plays the game the way it's supposed to be played. And it kind of reminds me of growing up as a kid, not really a kid because when I was in the league, this guy was still in the league, watching Lawrence Taylor. And Lawrence Taylor was so disruptive. Who was the greatest NFL player that you've ever watched?
Well, you know, I know, you know, since 2006, that's when I've had a chance to really analyze tape. And but we did have some clips kind of to show the players, you know, a guy like Reggie White, you know, so disruptive in the interior. And, you know, it just unbelievable game-changing type player.
To think that front that they had in Philadelphia, and it kind of reminded me when we went back to Philadelphia last year, but I remember watching film as a young player in the National Football League. You know, and when I made the conversion from linebacker to defensive end, you'd always try to watch defensive ends to pick up on stuff. And so watching Reggie White was useless. I mean, the guy had incredible speed, incredible power, incredible counter with the hunt move. And I'm sitting there watching him going, I can't learn anything from him because I can't do any of that. Physically, I can't do any of that.
See, you do have humility, Logs.
So I went to the other side and said, okay, well, let me watch this other guy. And this other guy was Clyde Simmons, who we had in Jacksonville here in 1996. And at that time when I was watching him, I don't know if Clyde Simmons wasn't as good as Reggie White. I mean, to think of what they had there on that defense in Philadelphia, Reggie White, Clyde Simmons, and Jerome Brown for a while. I mean, what a dominant front.
Yeah, it really is. And when you have a dominant front, you know, we talk in terms of our guys, it starts up front. It starts up front with the run game. It starts up front with defending the run and the pressure on the quarterback with the defensive line. And, boy, you really got to build from the line out.
All right, well, we come back here on the Gus Bradley Show. I want to talk about your induction maybe in the North Dakota State Hall of Fame one day.
No.
Well, why not? And also RG3, by the way, he's got a statue at Baylor, his school of choice. And we'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And this segment is brought to you by Beards Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. All right, Gus, RG3, he's got a statue at Baylor. Is he going to have a statue in Washington at some point for being a great Redskins quarterback?
Well, he's very talented, and, you know, I've been impressed with his accuracy. 29 for 37 for 270 yards. And I know it appeared, you know, a lot of quick game underneath routes, not a lot of shots. But, again, we believe that was, you know, partially to do because of the rush that Houston could get with J.J. Watt. So we understand that, you know, he wants to hunt for explosive plays. You don't have a guy like DeSean Jackson and not want explosive plays. So, you know, I think we understand that we could see him move out of the pocket a little bit more, try to extend the play, and take some shots to add on to that.
Boy, and I'm watching him on film. I remember watching him his rookie year, and he still kind of does some of the same thing. He can take some shots out of the pocket with the ball down the field, but he takes some shots in the process. He's a quarterback that's still learning.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, you see that when he does scramble. You know, some quarterbacks will get out and they'll slide and, all right, next play. you know, where he'll try to get that extra yards. Maybe not so much like he did in years past, but, you know, he's getting a little wiser. But I just, you know, he's a talented player. And, you know, any quarterback that can extend the play is always dangerous.
All right, so as part of this radio show, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, I say, okay, RG3, he's got a statue, you know, at Baylor that was unveiled, you know, right before opening weekend in the National Football League, or opening week in the National Football League. So I go to North Dakota State's website to see if there's a statue enshrinement, no, you know, scheduled for Gus Bradley there at the campus. And, of course, it wasn't. But I did find out that College Game Day is going to be at NDSU.
Oh, I know. They're fired up there. This is the second year in a row. And, I mean, there'll be thousands. I'm telling you now, thousands of people will be there. That football is taken very serious up there.
And they must have a big game on campus this weekend.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Is it Montana, I think?
We'll see if we can find it.
You know, and I'm not sure. I know last year it wasn't a big game, but I think just to experience the environment. So I'm really excited for the people up there, really good people.
All right, while I was at the website, I go to the Athletic Hall of Fame and go to the football category just to get an idea of some of the great players that have come out of North Dakota State, because there's been a few of them.
Yeah.
The guy that I popped into my mind immediately was Phil Hansen, who used to play opposite of Bruce Smith and was a fantastic defensive end for the Bills for like 11 years.
Right, yeah. And Phil, in the summers, would come back and we roomed together. You know, so, yeah, he was a tremendous player. But Steve Nelson, you know.
Played guard, right?
No, Steve Nelson, linebacker.
Oh, linebacker, for the Patriots. Steve Nelson. Okay, I was thinking of Nelson, guard for the Giants.
And then Ron Earhart, you know, as a play caller and as a coach in the NFL. So,
you know the name that stood out to me? I'm going down the list and, you know, and I'm looking at all the names just to have one to kind of grab you. You know, I mean, Phil Hansen, obviously, I knew he went there. Because, I mean, my whole family, for heaven's sakes, my mom's side of the family is from North Dakota. So, you know, Phil Hansen's like, he's a legend. You know, he's a celebrity in the National Football League. Everybody would call me and say, hey, you know, Phil Hansen went to NDSU, my cousins. Well, so when I'm on this site, I'm just filtering down through the names, and I see this name, and it looks familiar, but I'm going, wait a minute, and it's under the football category. So I click on the name, and it's Bob Backlund. Do you know who Bob Backlund is?
No.
You don't know who Bob Backlund is? Come on, guys.
I know. I've heard of the name, and I knew that he was a great player there, but I don't know.
Well, and the Bob Backlund that I knew was not a football player. The Bob Backlund that I knew was in the WWF. One of the greatest pro wrestlers of all time. So I click on the name, and sure enough, it's the Bob Backlund that went to North Dakota State University. He's in the Hall of Fame because he was a great wrestler and a great football player.
Well, there you go.
Bob Backlund. Who's the head of the WWF back then? I can't remember his name, but I'll look at it, commercial break. But anyway, you got to know that name, Gus. Come on, Bob Backlund.
I know. Yeah, I should have. That's my bad.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show, and we'll get off of Bob Backlund and maybe to this game in Washington back again here on the Gus Bradley Show, and you're listening to Jaguars Radio. Season tickets, single game tickets, or to learn more about being a Jaguars 365 member, call 633-2000 or visit jaguars.com. Back on the Gus Bradley Show with the head coach Gus Bradley and Jeff Loggeman here. Gus, this week against the Washington Redskins, we talked a lot about your offense already, and it's going to be a great matchup against Jim Haslett, the defensive coordinator for the Washington Redskins. He's been around in the National Football League for a long time. Him and Jay Gruden actually coached together back at the United Football League from the Florida Tuskers. And he plays a very aggressive style of defense. Going to have some opportunities.
Yeah, he does. He's a very attacking style. I think they pressure first and second down something like 25-30% of the down plays. So, they're looking to create big plays, and there's big plays to be had.
I'm sitting there watching that defense, and you've totally changed my mindset, because now when I watch teams, okay, I'm sitting there and I'm watching Brian Arakpo, and I'm watching Ryan Kerrigan. I'm saying those guys are Leos. Okay,
yeah.
So I mean, because they're outside linebackers in a 3-4 defense, and I always use that terminology now. I think those guys got Leo traits.
Yeah, that's right. Usually outside linebackers in a 3-4, you know, if we were looking at a free agent pool, you put those guys in that category.
The guy that stands out also on film, didn't play, I don't think, at all in the preseason for the Washington Redskins, but certainly had a really nice game. in week one against the Houston Texans, and that was the free agent that they got from the Dallas Cowboys. Jason Hatcher had 11 sacks last year for the Cowboys. They paid him like a four-year, $27 million contract, and from watching him on film, it looks like he's worth the money he's getting.
Yeah, he's very talented. You know what I like what they're doing with him is they move him around. They'll put him, line him up over the center, and they're really trying to get creative with him as far as getting him some rushes.
Who, if you look at the defensive backs for the Washington Redskins, you got a young guy on one side, David Amberson, and then on the other side, who is now a team captain, which kind of surprises me because D'Angelo Hall has never been known for having captain-type traits, you know, in his past. He's had a little bit of a volatile career in the National Football League, but maturing, I guess. But are these two guys equals, or do you look at corners when you play somebody like the Redskins or any other team and say, okay, this is the guy we want to attack?
Well, I think that you watch their style of play and how they, you know, how they try to impose their will. But I can remember Amberson. We looked at him heavily as a guy that we were looking at drafting. We really liked him. Very effective in college. Had a lot of interceptions his junior year.
All right, well, looking forward to the game against the Washington Redskins in Prince George's County, Maryland. Just doesn't sound right. I mean, never understood why they moved out of Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia, for those that don't know. But who knows why. All right, Gus, thanks for the time. Best of luck this week.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll talk to everybody next week. Same time, same place.